Come on. You shouldn't talk like that on the field. All right? Listen. You are QB.
All the fucking blame goes on your fucking shoulders.
All the glory, all the defeat, it's all on you to hold. So please,
get your fucking shit together!
Let's go, let's go.
You can't tell me you weren't hyped in the first 45 seconds of this intro if you were a former athlete. Before I get into breaking down the Him movie, I want to bring into the called out assembly that Maya Papaya, my sister, you are 100% right in doing what you did. When a man is trying to take you from your purpose, that is only a test of your Ruach, a test brought into your life for you to decide if you're going to go with Yah to be your husband, your heavenly father, or will you go into the world and be pulled away? So you should know just by this test alone that your glory, your exalting, and your promising blessing is not too far behind. Satan always sends the imitation. He always sends the forgery before Yah gets or gives the masterpiece or gives his blessing and gives his works. That's how I understood this system to go. Anytime that these demons, these chief demons, these prince demons know that a blessing is coming upon you, they will send the imitation and forgery first. And the Most High will allow it to happen because he knows your heart. Demons don't know your heart or your mind. Satan doesn't know your heart and knows your mind. They are disconnected from the Ruach HaKodesh. The only person who has known our minds and our hearts through trial and through tribulation is Yah. Yahuwah is the only one, along with Yahusha, the only one that knows. But if you read the Testament of Solomon, and when it talks about the demons fly about, and they before they fall like lightning to the earth, they hear the sentences from men. I'm assuming not only when we talk, but when we pray. And they also hear and survey all the powers of the innumerable angels that are down here or come back and forth as messengers. They would have to hear conversations of what's going to happen to this person, what's going to happen to that person, what event they need to insert themselves in order for the blessing to occur or divide this person from this person so the other person can step in and be the blessing that Yah intended it to be. So, of course, when they hear these things, they send forgeries and imitations. If you kind of want a visual understanding of this, go watch the movie Adjustment Bureau. They have to get this theology or this theory from somewhere. In the movie Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon, they talk about how they wanted him to be a president. And so they had case officers intervene in his life and keep him away from this one woman that he really truly wanted, that he really was in love with. But they didn't want him to be with this woman because this woman had him act impulsively. So the whole thing is about, the whole movie was basically about how they perverted Yah and what Yah and his angels do. That's all it was. Because the Most High is not raising up anybody out of nowhere to be a president of any country. What Yah is doing is picking the lowly, those who have the heart to follow his commandments, those who have the heart to be obedient to his word. He is raising them up to be kings, queens, princes. But of course, if you watch the movie, you understand what I'm coming from. But they get it from somewhere. So they know how the angels move from this realm to the other realm, and be messengers of Yah. And you read the scriptures. You can see scriptures where angels were coming down and tried to have a conversation with Abraham or have a conversation with Ezra. Like, it's all in scripture. Have angels been messengers disguised as humans coming down and making sure that you end up with somebody you're supposed to be ending up with? Just read the book of Tobit. The book of Tobit talks about how one of the main angels coming down and disguising himself and making sure that he married this woman, the woman who had a demon infatuated with her, that she was killing seven of her husbands before she even gotten to be married. Like in the wedding chamber, if you read the book of Tobit, he was strangling them. He was killing them before they actually consummated. But the angel was ensuring to Tobit that, no, you are marrying this woman. This woman has been picked for you. It's almost the same way with names, because we're kind of struggling with baby names right now. We have like a long list of baby names. So I'm almost certain I'm going to have to give the baby name situation to Yah. But even when before Isaac was born, they already knew what his name was going to be. An angel came down and said, you're going to name him Yitzchak, because it's already written on the heavenly tablets. So imagine, as Enoch has said, that he knows what's going to happen to the righteous because he has seen the book. He's seen the names. He's seen what will happen to those who do follow Yah and do follow the commandments and do follow the statutes. He has seen it before any of us come into this world. Now, if Enoch knows what's going to happen to the righteous by name, I guarantee you that before Yah created this world and when he set Adam, the angels already knew from the time of the beginning to the end, the angels knew exactly who is written upon the book of life. So you have to think that go ask your parents. I talked about this before in episodes long ago. Go ask your parents and ask your parents, why did they name you the name that they named you? Was there another name that they were going to go with? Just ask them and see what they say. Like, oh, we're going to call you this, but we decided to go you this way. Just imagine if you get to the judgment and your name, you see it written in the book of life, and is written in a name that your parents argued over, and it happened to be that name, but that name has already been in that book from the beginning, before your parents was even born, before your grandparents was even born. That is the beauty of this walk. It's already, the ball game is already called. We just going through color commentary. So again, to my sister, Maya Papaya, you did an awesome job in sticking to Yah, because the Most High sent something that would try your heart, and you have succeeded. So just know, because of this, a blessing is coming. Now, let me get into this hymn movie. It ain't going to be no spoiler. It's not really a spoiler alert, because to me, it was like a hour and 36 minute Nike ad for football, except you didn't see any Nike symbolism. It was like an ad, a documentary ad. It's like an ad that they put on YouTube to oversell a product. If they wanted to oversell something, that they would do like a longer 5, 10, or even 20 minute long advertisement thing with a little skit and a little, you know, a little character development within this in the storyline. This is what it was. Don't go in to see this movie and think you're going to see some football. You're not going to see some football. And now thinking about it, this is exactly what Marlon Wayans was gifted when he changed his child to a trans child. When he went online, Instagram, when he did interviews and was talking about how his child is now trans, and how he supported this child, all of a sudden now you see him pop up in this movie, him. Now, he did a, I think he did an okay job. Like, if you grew up watching Marlon Wayans, you know how most of his roles were goofy and not really, they weren't really serious. Like, even White Chicks, it was funny, but he had serious moments. So, he's an okay actor. So, he's trying to act as a football player at the end of his career. Doesn't know if he's going to retire or not. His contract is up. That's the only background story you're ever going to see. You're not going to see this brother out there running around like you saw Jamie Foxx in Any Given Sunday. And even then, you didn't really see Jamie Foxx because of the stunt double. But you saw more Jamie Foxx in uniform running and throwing than you would ever see Marlon Wayans, just because the way he's built. There's no way in the world he could pass as a football player, especially as a quarterback of a professional league. But when they started the movie, they had two teams. One was called the Saviors, and the other was called the Atlanta Masons. Off rip, you should already know what it's going to be. Off rip, you should already know what's going to happen. They didn't really go too heavy with the occult because, in my mind, they knew if they wanted to push an occult message, they couldn't overload it with symbolism because people are waking up. People would readily identify what the symbolism is, and they would share it among online and TikTok and all that, and then it would defeat the purpose of why they would try to sneak the symbolism in this movie. So they kind of did without it. It was only certain things that you would see to be like, aha, that ties to Freemasonry, or aha, that ties to something else. You would have to go deep, deep, and deep. Like Marlon Wayans' character was Isaiah White. In Gematria and Chaldean numerology, it's 33. That I already knew. I knew one of those names had to either be Cameron Cade or whatever the guy's name. And then Marlon Wayans' character, Isaiah White. I knew one of those names had to be 33. And then it was. And then I saw Atlanta versus Atlanta Masons. And then they had the Survivors, no, the Saviors or whatever. And those were the two teams. That's the only two teams you see in this whole entire movie. So the whole process of this movie was to shrink how a college prospect goes into the draft, goes into the combine, and then the period between the combine and when you first sign your contract, they tried to shrink that an hour, 36 minutes by using the football tropes of the process of what happens. Like, okay, you do the interviews, when you're going to be drafted, you sit and wait for the draft, except they didn't do really a draft ceremony. It was like, oh, you're picked. Like, you're ready to go to the league. Like, everything they did, they try to make it a psychological horror film. And it just wasn't coherent. Especially somebody who knows football. It wasn't a coherent process. Like, you didn't see a draft. You just, oh, he took a telephone call by being at a party, because that's what we do. We party, we drink, you know, whatever. And then he got a call like, oh, I'm going to the league. It wasn't even a draft selection. He got a phone call, I'm going to the league. Then something else happens that don't really happen. Like for a quarterback or any position, you don't go meet a retired football player in hopes that if you take his job, then you sign the contract. There is no retired football player is going to meet with a first round draft pick or any draft pick to go work them out for an organization. That ain't happening. I'm sorry, it never happened. Especially when you're a first round draft pick and you're about to take somebody else's spot, y'all barely even speak. When I was drafted, and they didn't even want to draft me as a running back. They wanted Troy Polamalu. They dropped down from the 16th pick to the 27th pick because the GM at the time for Kansas City, Carl Peterson, wanted a running back because they didn't know Priest Holmes was going to come back or not because he was injured. He had a leg issue. Dick Vermeil wanted Troy Polamalu. The rest of the organization wanted Troy Polamalu. The one GM overrided everybody else and say, no, I want a running back. So what they did was to drop down 16 to the 27th pick, selected me. Then I went through hell because they didn't want a running back. And then Priest Holmes ended up coming back. So we had this whole awkward situation where he's not really 100% running, but they know he was coming back. So the fanfare of doing all this pep rally stuff that they did when they welcomed me and then they welcomed him back, it was just awkward, yo. I'm telling you, it would be no situation that I would come there and think Priest Holmes was going to break down how to be a National Football League running back or player in this system. We didn't even speak, and he wasn't even a talkative guy to begin with. So we didn't even really speak. It was awkward moments where I tried to hang out with him, and then people or fans will come behind us and be like, yo, don't let Larry Johnson take your job, because at the time I was starting to play a little bit. It was just awkward, yo, and he had to laugh that off, and I had to act like I wasn't there. So for a situation of a quarterback being a prospect for an organization to sign before signing a contract to meet with a NFL professional player that's about to retire or so off of injury, it's never happened. But in this movie, he goes to this facility of this guy's house, which is an amazing house. He has like his own, you know, indoor, I think it's like a half football field. It's not a full 100-yard football field, but it's like a half AstroTurf football field with all the works. He got his own medical staff, everything. And then, of course, his wife is like Julia Fox, which is the white girl that Kanye West was dating for a while. And she just looked weird. She looked weird in the movie. She looked weird in real life. And, of course, the trope is the black quarterback have to have a white wife, or any professional athlete has to have the quintessential white wife. So she was trying to sell this brother some anal, an anal plug. It's just random. She tried to sell an anal plug to him. And it was in the shape of an obelisk. So then, again, they tried to hide the Freemasonry, the occult symbolism of the obelisk. And they tried to hide it in certain places. So people saw that and was gross. But I saw it as, this is where the Freemasonry is coming in now, through the obelisk. And that's the shaft of Nimrod, the penis of Baal. And she wanted him to put that up his butt, which is, it makes sense because Freemasons are phallic worshipers. It's an all-male fraternal organization. It's an all-male brotherhood. And I said this before, it's connected to the Knights Templar. And what did the Knights Templar get caught doing? Doing homosexual rituals and defecating on the cross and worshiping the Baphomet. So most of the rituals now in Black Hollywood and in any Hollywood has to do with something going in your anal cavity. That's what they do. And then they come online talking about how they love Jesus. Jesus this and Jesus that. I'm a Jesus guy. Recently, Justin Bieber, this is a little one-off side combo, but Justin Bieber recently, 4 days ago, posted a picture with his child with a pizza logo on top of it, trying to hug it in this pink blanket. It wasn't too long ago that you Christians were falling for Justin Bieber, the Jesus guy. The sickness part of it is the post that he posted 4 days ago with him and his wife at a pool. And it's, if you go through the pictures, it's him with the pizza logo with it over top of this child. But he's using as the soundtrack of this post his song, Everything Hallelujah. Like, again, if you don't understand symbolism, you are going to miss what they're really trying to say to you. I remember I did early podcast shows and Christians would interview me and they would say, why do I need to know about symbolism? Why do I need to know about any of this stuff? I said, because this is how they communicate. They can tell you they love God. They can tell you 1,000 interviews and 1,000 TV shows and 1,000 CDs that have been printed how they love Jesus Christ. But then if you look at the symbolism that they use and all the media that they control and own, you will see their true message. That is why it's important to see the symbolism. If Manly P. Hall, the 33rd degree Freemason, has said that if humans could understand symbolism, a great veil will fall before their eyes. A greater awakening would happen. But people are only antagonized or only persuaded by what they see in the flesh. That's why this whole Charlie Kirk situation happened. I automatically knew just because of Justin Bieber, Kanye West, and all these celebrities that said they love Jesus came out of the woodworks, and I should know. Satan's not putting anybody that knows anything about the real truth online unless he's going to mock it. Why would Jesus Christ, at the time of the Antichrist, is supposed to be on coming upon stage, why would Christianity and Jesus be at the forefront before the before Yah's masterpiece? Like I said before, the imitation and the forgery has to come before the masterpiece. So why would the real thing be at the height of when the Antichrist is about to jump on stage? Why would it be at the height? Why would everybody be okay with worshiping and seeing Jesus being on all media platforms and having images and characters that they implanted in the society to keep uplifting the name Jesus Christ if we're preparing for the Antichrist and the beast system? Makes no sense. People are like, oh, we're going to get ready for the pre-tribulation rapture. How? We haven't even seen the Antichrist. How can this conversation be at the height before the beast system even comes, before he even causes us to take the mark? There was a woman already bragging how she got the Amazon mark. She was going to Whole Foods and wait, like, oh, I'm about to pay for my hand. I'm about to pay. And she was so happy. And she got that mark before it was even caused for her to get it. So how can all of this be happening under the umbrella that Jesus is going to return? And because nothing has happened yet. That's the funny part. Nothing has happened yet. But like I said, the imitation and the forgery always comes before the masterpiece. It is the trap. It is the delusion. It is the snare that people don't see because they don't know symbolism. So the whole thing with Julia Fox is to get the new quarterback that's supposedly the prospect of this organization, is to take him out, take care of him, do like media training. So it was like 7 days of certain aspects of being a football player that you would need to learn in order to be part of an organization. And I don't remember all of them because I have to go back and watch the movie. But I know, you know, day six was sacrifice. Of course, they used the number six along with sacrifice. But the other ones were like resilience. And he did like a media personality thing, how he should talk to the media, his background story, blah, blah, blah. Just like I said, it's what being a college football player to being a professional rookie, what comes with that in that short time span. That's all it was. And then there was one part, what you probably see in the trailer, is that they were taking the ball machine, and was ramming the ball, like turned up to like 60 to 70 miles per hour right into this man's face. And that scene, there were like six or seven brothers. These were, quote unquote, the free agents that they were just coming in hoping to be part of the organization. Again, a professional quarterback at the end of his career is not bringing in random free agents to go work out a guy who could be taking his job. It just ain't gonna happen. Now, there are free agents who are looking to be practice players. Now, mind you, being a practice player in the National Football League is still good money. I think it's, at the time when I played, you were a practice player, you were making $100,000 a year. And that's only when you're working from Monday, not even Monday, really, because Tuesdays are off. Monday through Thursday, that's your job. And then Fridays are just walkthrough practices. And then Saturdays, you're either leaving or you're doing another walkthrough. But your work week is literally Monday to Thursday, and you're making $100,000, $150,000 a year. That was in 2005, 6, or 7. I'm guessing it's probably up by $250,000 to maybe even $300,000 to be a practice player now. But being a free agent, if you wanted to be part of the team, you had to go to a practice that's separate from our real practice. Like, it would be usually after practice or maybe on Tuesdays when we had our day off, which is the day off for everybody in National Football League. Tuesdays is when they would bring in free agents, the guys who were college players looking to still play, or kickers or punters. They always did that. When there was a kicker and punter that wasn't playing good on Sunday, you should know if they missed two punts or they missed two field goals, there is a kicker and a punter Tuesday coming to try out so they can get ready to release them. And I already went through this. One guy was drafted from the UCLA. We even used a draft pick on this guy. I think he was like the sixth-round or fifth-round draft pick. He was from UCLA. The reason why he was picked, because Carl Peterson, the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, he was from UCLA. So he picked this guy with a draft pick. This kid could not kick. I'm telling you, he kept choking. And sure enough, he missed about four field goals on one, I think, one scrimmage or one preseason game. They had another kicker Tuesday working him out, and that guy was gone. And I ain't seen him in the league since. So when they bring you on differently from the whole other organization activities. But there was one white guy who was eager. He must have known that the drill was going to cause for him to get a football in his face. So he was so eager, he jumped up. He said, yeah, I'll do it. And that symbolizes most of the underdog white people that they bring into the league. I'm not trying to make it the racial thing, but I'm just telling you what it is. Every team has, college to professional, has had, even high school, every level of football has that white guy that just didn't have no athletic ability, but had all the heart. I guarantee you some of you know some of these men. Some of you have even been some of these guys of being no talent, but you were on the football team because you had leadership qualities and you had heart. That is what this particular gentleman played in this movie. He took maybe about four or five. I'm talking about they standing 2 feet from the ball machine. And they're taking that ball machine in a spiral as big as those NFL footballs are, those professional footballs are, taking a spiral right in his face, breaking his nose, breaking his teeth. And the reason that they show that is to show that he had heart, that he had the ability to sacrifice himself because he wanted to be on the team so much. I played with a couple of these guys. Historically, this is the type of guys they had. Like, if you remember when Mark Wahlberg played Vince Papale in the movie Invincible, how he was a guy off the street and his dream was to be a professional football player. And at the time, they were taking in free agents or people from the city for some reason to be scabs or be practice players. This guy who was a school teacher ended up being on the Philadelphia Eagles. And at the time, Dick Vermeil was the coach. He was played by Greg Kinnear. And before Greg Kinnear shot this movie, he actually came to our camp. I think it was in 2004. Greg Kinnear came and he wanted to, you know, shadow Dick Vermeil to kind of pick up his mannerisms. And it was funny because Dick Vermeil tried to play him at the end of practice. Like, oh, this is Greg Kinnear. He's going to do a show. He's going to do a movie about Vince Papale, a guy that I coached. And, you know Greg Kinnear. He played a gay guy. And he was talking about the movie As Good As It Gets. And we were all like, ooh. And then when Greg Kinnear spoke, he said, yeah, that's right. I played a gay guy. He says, looks like I'm going to play another one again. Everybody fell out laughing, yo. It was so funny. Because Dick Vermeil he's like a player's player guy. But he likes those guys who are underdogs. That's why he loved Priest Holmes so much, because he was an underdog. Priest Holmes came from Texas, and he was behind Ricky Williams. And then when he got into the league, when he got to Baltimore, he was behind Jamal Lewis. So Dick Vermeil loved Priest Holmes because he was an underdog guy. So he loved him, and he loved Derek Blaylock. So it was two guys that were underdog guys I was behind. So coming in as a first-round draft pick, I didn't play for the first 3 years because I was trapped behind the glorified underdogs. And even when I was at Penn State, Joe Paterno was the same way. He used to always big up in squad meetings about Mickey Shuler. That's all he talked about. He had Rashard Casey, LeVar Arrington, Courtney Brown. He had so many top-tier guys, Bobby Engram, O.J. McDuffie, Kajana Carter. He had all these guys, but when he got in squad meetings, he would only talk about Mickey Shuler. That's all he talked about. Mickey Shuler this, Mickey Shuler that. And it was one of those underdog guys that he loved. So I played with some of these guys. We had one guy named Chris Horn. He was like that. Buffalo Bills had one guy. His name was Steve Tasker. The guy that's on CNN, Coy Wire, he was one of them. He's that type of guy. So that's what they did. They brought the one white guy who was the athlete, and they put him as a free agent. He had like the tattoo Faith across his chest. So they would make to let you know that he was like some holy guy. And then they rammed balls in front of his face. That's what that was symbolizing. Shoot, Julian Edelman was those type of guys. And you know, of course, they rigged the game for Julian Edelman to get a MVP trophy. One, because he was Jewish. And two, they were in on screwing up the play calling for the defense. At the time, the Super Bowl, the Patriots, I think that was the last time Tom Brady went to the Super Bowl, they literally was running under routes. This is how you know it was rigged. The team they were playing had the best defensive backfield in all of NFL during that season. But you trying to tell me, as fast as all those guys were, they couldn't cover Julian Edelman? Seriously, they couldn't cover Julian Edelman. All he was doing was running 5-yard under routes and was catching the ball on the under because they made the defense play three covers deep. A team that did not have a breakaway receiver. They didn't have like a Tyreek Hill. New England Patriots didn't have no burners in their receiver department. But somehow, the defense was playing three deep coverage, soft coverage, and they were hitting them underneath. They did that the whole entire game. That's why the score was all over the place. The score was like, 7 to like 16 or something like that, because they had to manage that game to get Julian Edelman the MVP of that game because he was Jewish. And it has never happened in the history of the National Football League that a Jew won the NFL MVP. That's why that game looked the way it looked. That's why it wasn't really appeasable to watch. They didn't care. They rigged it. They didn't care. They wanted that Julian Edelman to get the MVP so bad. They could care less if people didn't enjoy the festivities or the entertainment. That's why in the beginning of the National Football League games and at the end of it, they tell you, thank you, this is a presentation of the National Football League. They say, hello, this is the presentation of the National Football League, and they thank you for watching a presentation for the National Football League. It's your fault if you think it's real. So, like I said, they did this whole process during this movie where it's visually beautiful. Trust me, it's visually, you know, tantalizing to the eyes. But when you watch it, it's just, it goes all over the place. Like, you know, wild fans. Like, you really tried to really push this whole thing about fans being crazy and fans sneaking into this man's house. And then they ended up killing them, killing these fans and beating them up. And especially one was a woman. Like, it was just weird. They were just trying to make something out of nothing. And then at the end of the movie, he was ready to take this guy's job or take Marlon's job. But he tried to kill him. That was the whole thing. The whole thing was like, I'm going to kill the guys whose job I'm after. And then after he kills this guy, he walks out of the house. And then they're on another football field, which is outside. And this is when they ask him to sign a contract. And he finds out the whole time his dad, being in the military, took pictures next to the guy who's the owner of the team. So it's like programming you with, we've been selecting you before you were even born. And the reason why they made his father, the guy who's looking, the young quarterback, the reason why they made him, his father, a Marine or part of the Army, if you look at the very first rock stars like Jim Morrison and The Doors and most of those people back then that got sacrificed at age 27, they had relatives or parents that were in the military. Snoop, being a rapper, his father was in the military. So that was their first instance of MK Ultra, was using the military and then using their children. But since their parents already knew about being programmed by being in the military, it was easy to get their children to do the same thing. So the earliest rock stars, their parents were in the military. So they're saying that these kids were selected to be rock stars. So when he got to the contract, they were showing that you were pre-selected to take this oath. You were pre-selected, just like Freemasonry. It's passed down through your bloodline. They don't just go and say, hey, we're going to select you to be a Freemason. It's only certain people they have selected. And when you look at celebrities or Hollywood, and we are amazed how through the bloodline, everyone is connected or related to a king of England or the European monarchies. We're surprised at that. They are selected. These children are selected, pre-selected. So the whole thing was he had to sign the contract. And then, of course, Julia Fox, for some reason, is the one that's in front of the podium, just like it's a Masonic hall, is set up. Like, if you look at any of the Freemason videos that's online, that somehow they're trying to be a secret, but they've been showing what's going on in these lodges. If you look at that, it's always like a row of people in the back, and there's always a book in front, usually a Bible. There's an altar in the middle of the circle. In the movie, they didn't use the square and compass. What they did was they used, which you'll see it over and over again, is the occult or the alchemist sign, which is a circle within a box, within a triangle, within a circle. And this is what that is. The triangle in occultism is a conjuration device. The magic triangle serves as the designated area where a summoned spirit, demon, or angel is compelled to appear. The triangle can represent the three planes of existence, physical, mental, spiritual, or a sacred triad, which is why Europeans came up with this Holy Trinity idea, which is not biblical. It is a cult. The same people that gave you the Trinity is the same people that gave the name Jesus. And that name is still attached in Gematria as 444. Lucifer, 444. Masonic is 444. Jay-Z's album, 444. As a Prince or Freemason, that's why they keep saying Jesus. That's why Justin Bieber says Jesus. They meant Lucifer. If you type in Jesus is Lucifer, it comes out to 666. That's why we don't use that name. Just the truth of knowing that there were no J's in the Hebrew language should already tip your ears to be like, oh, okay, they didn't call him this even when he was alive. And the letter J wasn't even invented back then. So they were using Isos Christos. That's still Greek. And if you understand the Pythagorean theorem and what Pythagoras did, which I think was the earliest version of the mystery schools, they were using math and shapes. That's how Pythagoras came up with the octaves. See, David could play the harp without knowing octaves, but he could just play. That's just something that's ingrained in a lot of you Negroes, you Shemites' ability to play without to pick up an instrument and just play. That was David. Demons don't have the ability to create. And those who are under demonic oppression can't create. That is why you've seen the movie industry and the music industry taking a downturn, because there's no creativity. No one had to go into an oath to be a musician back in those days. You just played. You were out there to play the vibe. The music changed from album to album to album. Now it's not like that. It's not like that so much. Now you get one good hit, and you become popular, they funnel you into a secret society under demonic oppression, and then your mind is all over the place because they got you doing these rituals, these homosexual rituals that try your spirit, that mess up your ruach, and they tell you, okay, now go make me a song. And that's why the second album of every artist in this generation has been terrible, because they have been under demonic oppression. And only those who are really good with demonic oppression, they can twist it and mold it through their talent to make it sound good. I mean, Adam Plant and Led Zeppelin did it for years. And one of them members is part of OTO, which is what Aleister Crowley was a part of, OTO. They used to brag and talked about how they would go into his house and conjure up songs by using demons. But those who are good-hearted, have some type of morality in them, they struggle with trying to live between a spiritual world of trying to be good or appear good and also be a part of demonic possession and oppression. Their work suffers because that's not what they're truly supposed to be. Some people thrive because that's what they came into this life to be. It's like the movie Twilight, how that white girl, she did not feel alive until she became a dead vampire. She didn't feel like her calling was to be alive. Like I said, some people can thrive in the other side. We're born to do that. Like I said, called, pre-selected to be that way. But those who aren't called to be that way, struggle with it. Some of you probably struggle with it because you're trying to live in between two worlds. And the Most High calling you into his world, but this fleshly world that's corrupting and is going to rot soon is calling you to that world. So he's at this podium about to sign this oath, and he finds out that his father's been knowing this guy that's in charge of his organization for the whole time. And of course, they tried to throw in the occult symbolism party, like the Eyes Wide Shut party, but it looked weird. Like all of a sudden, all these places were all connected to everything. They went to like looked like it was a school gymnasium for this party. And then when he drank like a goblet to toast, it made it look like, to me, when I saw it, looked like blood. It didn't pour down his mouth. Like I said, they tried to hide the real occult thing. And I know the National Football League or the higher-ups in that league tried to tell them, do not make it seem like this is what we do, even though this is what we do. In the beginning of the movie, he was just practicing. And he got hit in the head by some demon. Don't even show you that he had contact in a football game. It just shows a man randomly stand up behind him with horns and a helmet and strike him the back of his head. And all of a sudden, he has a brain issue. And this is before he goes into to do the combine exercises. It was just, like I said, it was stupid. They tried to allude to CTE. They tried to allude that this is what goes on in the National Football League and soon college and even sooner in high school. But they're trying to cover it up and make it so imbalanced where you can't really, you know, readily follow along. That's why most people didn't like the movie. It was already 37 Rotten Tomatoes in the first week. When I went to go see it, not many people saw it. It was like maybe 10 people in there that saw it. And so it's not really a popular movie. People were expecting a football story with this guy. I mean, he was an attractive guy. I mean, light skin, light eyes. I mean, his father was like an online editorial ad model or whatever. So you would think like you would see, you know what I mean? You would see like a real storyline behind it, but it wasn't. It was just how they could ritualize and make the process of becoming a college prospect to a professional rookie, you know, and the ending of a one career who the guy was amazing and all that. Another part in the movie, when Marlon Wayans says he's going to go watch tape, he keeps saying this throughout the whole movie. I'm going to watch tape. I'm going to go watch tape. I'm going to watch tape. And he's not really watching tape. The main character goes in and finds that he's just sitting in a chair, looking up at the sky and looking at people saying, yeah, you the man. Yeah, like crowd, like being in or going into a room and you're just seeing the crowd. That's it. So it's like playing off the fact that national football players or former and current love themselves too much. And which is the reason why we get sacrificed and we don't understand it. It's why we get sacrificed, we don't see it. Because we can't let go of the crowd noises. We can't let go of fanfare. We can't let go of being an idol. And since we don't know what to do with our lives after a sport, the only image that we're attached to is the image we were when we were on that field, when we were in that stadium. That's how only people know us. When former players were like, oh, are you so-and-so? Didn't you play so? Oh, man, you were in my fantasy league. As humble as we accept it, we love hearing that. I mean, not me now, but I'm saying at the time, before I was waking up, I was yearning to be a part of the Kansas City Chiefs community. I mean, I'm showing back up to go to games. I'm showing up to, you know, to sign autographs for the fans in the parking lot. Like, I don't know who I am. So I'm going back to the image of what I know. I'm going back to the comfort. I don't know myself as a child of Yah. I don't know myself as Yehuda. So during that process, when the Most High puts you in the wilderness, and when he puts you in the wilderness, he takes care of you while you're in the wilderness. So he had pity and mercy upon me. He showed me grace. He said, no, I'm going to allow him to do this so he understands that my way is better than his way. That the image and the character I'm going to give him, which I developed for him before he came into this world, I am going to show him all the beauty and grace and blessings doing it my way. I'm going to allow him to work like Jacob did 7 years for LeVon. I'm going to allow him to do that. Which is funny because I played 7 seasons in the league. I'm going to allow him to do the 7 years. For what he think he wants. Now, what he truly wants, I'm going to make him work double for me, but he only have to do twice, do half the work. So I'm taking it, I'm in my, what, 6th or 7th year of working for y'all. I mind you, I'm going to continue doing this work, but I see it as this symbolism. That I wanted one thing, and I got another. But he's pulling me out and say, no, I want you to work and do this particular work for me, and then I will give you what you want. Because the life I wanted in the league was to be married with a woman in the industry. I don't care what industry it was, would most likely be Hollywood. Be married in the industry, have my children, and have my children wear my jerseys at games. That was my dream. That was my fantasy. My fantasy wasn't making it to the Pro Bowl. It wasn't being a Super Bowl champion or going to the Super Bowl. That wasn't my fantasy. My fantasy was playing in the National Football League, be able to be successful enough to be married, then have my kids be at my games, and then that was my life. And if I would die on the football field, that was even more of a blessing to me because that's how I wanted to go out. I would be okay dying on the football field because that's how I played. But the Most High has something else better for me. He's like, if you are written in the book of, I don't know if I'm written in the book of life, but I'm looking at this from Yah's like, if I'm going to put you in this book of life, I'm going to give you a different type of work, a different type of team, a different type of number, a different type of image that you will never leave if you do this work for me, and I will give you exactly what you want. I will give you your wife. I will give you your children. Y'all all will be playing on the same team. You will be captain. You want to be exalted? Do this work, and I will show you how you can be exalted. You want to be righteous and be upright? Do this and follow this, and I will show you how to get there. It's only a blessing that the Most High actually allowed me my last preseason game with the Miami Dolphins, that I actually had my daughter, Jalen, when she was just only 2 years old, I think, at the time. The Most High was so graceful and merciful to me. He allowed Jalen to come into my life at an age where she was able to wear she had a little Miami Dolphin cheerleader outfit on with my number on in the back with the name Poppy on it. And she saw me score my last NFL touchdown in a preseason game against the Dallas Cowboys, which is my mother's team. To me, I could actually let that go. I still think about, I think on that moment. If I didn't have that moment, I would be breaking my neck and ruining my Ruach, not following y'all, trying to recapture that moment or trying to get that moment. The Most High knew in my heart and my thoughts, that's the only thing I truly wanted when I wanted a child. That's why I searched so hard to find a child, to bring in a child. Like, I wanted the child before I wanted the marriage because I knew at some point I wasn't going to get married before I had the child. But that's why I wanted the child for. I wanted the child because I was trying to chase something that I couldn't do with my father. When my father was a free agent for the Washington Redskins, it was so short-long, I didn't come into the world when he was a football player. I came in afterwards. So I only know of, you know, black and white old school film tapes and his conversations around me to know that he actually played for the Washington Redskins because he didn't talk much about it. I think it still hurts him, the fact that he didn't get to play longer in the National Football League. And here he has a son drafted in the first round. And I think that damages him a little bit because he wasn't around me when I got drafted. But when he had other players, when he went to Ohio State, he went to the draft for them. I did my draft at the house, and he could have easily just not go to work, which just at the time was like a scrimmage game. He could have just like, no, I'm going to be with my son when he gets drafted. I think it still hurts him. It still hurts him that, you know, you bring a son in the world and overaccomplish all the things that he wanted to do. So that's what I wanted. I wanted to be around when my father was playing. And so, of course, that became a thing for me. I wanted to be playing when I had a child. So Yah was graceful enough, merciful enough to allow me to have that moment, that lasting moment before he sent me out into the wilderness to rebuild me. And all I could think about is Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy 8, I'll go through 1 through 6. All the commandments which I command you this day shall ye guard to do, that ye may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land which Yahuwah swore 7 oaths unto your fathers. And you shall remember all the way which Yahuwah Elohaka led you these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble you and to prove you and to know what was in your heart, whether you would guard his commandments or no. Again, when he puts you through that wilderness, it don't have to be 40 years. For me, it was maybe 10 to 15 years. But he put me in the wilderness to humble me and to prove me, to know what was in my heart, whether I would guard his commandments or no. And he humbled me, or humbled you, and suffered me and suffered you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you knew not, neither did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread only, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahuwah, man lives. Your raiment waxed not old upon you. I mean, I wasn't walking around homeless. I had a roof over my head. Even when my money was all messed up, I still had a place to stay. Neither did your foot swell. These 40 years, you shall also consider in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so Yahuwah Elohaka chastens you. And this is what I'm going to carry to my son. Now I'm not sharing with my son football jerseys, my teams or my favorite teams, and Sundays watching NFL Sunday Ticket. I'm sharing him Deuteronomy 8. You shall also consider in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so Yahuwah Elohaka chastens you. That is what I'm passing down. Therefore, you shall guard the commandments of Yahuwah Elohaka to walk in his ways and to fear him. That is what we pass down. Not passing down the oaths or the fraternal orders of either Black Greek organizations or any Greek organization that has Masonic ties, because my father is an iota. I mean, mind you, he was in deep sleep. He was under curses. So, like most Negroes in this country in the 50s and the 60s, they went towards brotherhood. So that has been always a part of my generational curse. I was close to be, I think I could be a prince or a Freemason, because I lived very Masonically. I lived a duality life. It was a point where I didn't want people to call me Larry. You either call me LJ or you call me Larry. And that came with two split personalities. I was LJ in nightlife, and I was Larry in the daytime. I was two different people, and that's how I wanted it. So I was already living a duality. I was living by my own rules. Now, you could say I was living a Baphomet life, which is the same thing you would see in the movie if you choose to go see it. I lived that life for longer than an hour, 36-minute movie. I've lived periods. I'm talking about it was 5 years in between those phases where I would live this type of life. Like being sexually immoral. Like, that was the life that comes with it. The access to money and opportunity, that's all you need to give me to have me run amok around here, is give me access to money and freedom. That's all I wanted. And they occasionally, you know, defeat the beast of, you know, spilling blood on the football field. I lived that. I loved that life. I felt it was nothing wrong with that life. At the same time, I was a Jesus guy and God. Well, not really a Jesus guy. I was a God guy, because I didn't really pray to Jesus. I was a God guy. Like, oh, God, please make me not get injured. And after I not get injured, oh, please, God, watch over me. After I go get drunk and try to outdrink everybody after taking Toradol shots, which is one of the things they show you in the movie. There was a, you know, the emoji where you do the smiley face, not the smiley face, but the weird face, with the hands up like, oh no. They had a shot like that, and they kept shooting him up with it. He's like, oh, you want your pain to go away? They kept shooting the shot into him. That was Toradol. They no longer use Toradol anymore. Toradol was like a pain thing. So before games, you get a Toradol shot in your arm, and it feels like somebody pouring ice water down your veins from your shoulder. And that would numb you for pain. So you would go and you would play, but it only lasts up damn near a halftime. So we would take Toradol shots, take Tylenol before, and then by halftime, you ain't high, but you ain't feeling nothing. And then by the time the game over, you get in a cold tub, and then you go home. And then you wait 3 hours after you got home, depending on how what time the game ends. And the games, if it's at noon, you happy, because from the game ends, you're getting home about 5 o'clock. You watch ESPN till about 6 or 7. Then you maybe take a nap. Then you're getting ready to go out around 9 or 10 o'clock, because depending on the city you're in, it ain't open 24 hours. So then you go out, drink, and then Monday, you go in for walkthroughs, you go in for film sessions. On Mondays, you sore as hell. Then you get into the cold tub, and then Tuesday's your day off, but you use Monday night again to go out. And my thing, what I would do, if the game was on noon, I'm getting ready to book a flight to Vegas Sunday night. So from Sunday, if I don't have to be in work on Monday, I'm taking a flight from Vegas Sunday. I'm in Vegas Sunday, Monday, coming home Tuesday. But after I'm in the league and I've become the starter, it became, I'm about to take a private jet for Jay-Z's birthday, and I go take a private jet to where'd I go? I went to New York to take this jet. We didn't actually get to take off because there was something wrong with the Houston Rockets jet that Beyonce released. We sitting on this, I'm drunk, sitting on this jet, or sitting on this big ass 747. With Kelly Rowland, Solange, Maverick, you know that name, Rich, and Jay, and it was Jay Brown. So, yeah, we were lit drinking on the 747, thinking we were going to take off. I pass out. I wake back up, find out we ain't even go nowhere. Then we had to change planes. Then we go to St. Bart's for the birthday. So we on this boat to St. Bart's. I got to be at practice on a Monday. No, actually, it was a Wednesday. I got to be back for Wednesday. So I'm telling Herm Edwards, yeah, I'm going to be back. I had to then rent another private jet and a small boat to get me to an airplane to go back across in a private jet from St. Bart's into Kansas City to even make it to practice. And I missed some parts of practice. I missed the walkthrough on Wednesday. That's how wild my life was. I was chasing experiences. And that's the reason why I think they really had enough of me in KC, because I was living by my own rules. But like I said, I lived that Masonic life. And being around Prince Hall Freemasons and all that, they never brought me to a room and said, hey, we really want to do this with you. I was like more or less the test case. The only problem with me, I didn't care for money enough to act right. That's what scared them off of me. One, my dad probably stepped in and said he don't want that. Two, they knew of me as being somebody they couldn't control, because I didn't act right when I got money. I would say all the right things in media interviews and all that, but when it came to situations, especially my domestic violence situations, it was a demonstration that I did not care about money. That's what it looked like to them. And they only can control people who actually care about money. And the other problem is, since I had a strong father, I didn't respect authority. I didn't respect the men around me. That's also an issue if they want to make you part of Freemasonry, because they need you to be in fear. If you idolize your father so much and you outgrow the idolization of your father, which means if he can't control you, what makes you think they're going to be able to control you? So what y'all would see, what y'all think Kanye West is doing, is completely opposite. He's putting on a show to think he's so rebellious against this system, but at the same time, he's in the system. He's in the organization. But they get these theology, I'm not saying they get it from me, but they get the image of rebellion from somewhere. And all they can go from is those who have already lived that particular life. They can only take, like I said, demons can't create. They can only imitate what's already been put out there. So if they have an example of a guy who's standing up and he'll say whatever he wants out of the mouth and don't care if anybody say anything against them, they use those images and different examples from people who are already living, and they put them in a character that they can control, which is why they have control oppositions. That's why so many people think I'm a control op. I don't know why. I say exactly what I want to say, and it's because I'm not being touched. There's a lot that goes with me not being touched, which has nothing to do with a Freemasonic thing. One, it has to do with Yah being my father, being my protector, my provider, and in this realm, in the realm that we can't see, but also because my ties to my father are so strong, he has pull. So this is the reason why a lot of people don't say, I'd be saying I'm a control op. I'm not really a control. I say whatever I want. Obviously, you see them shadow banning my account, so obviously I ain't saying what I want and not being on the platforms, and they show me off as a control op. I'm not doing any of the symbolisms that everybody else is doing. They have to tell you that they're control ops. Just like Candace Owens. She the one came out and said, oh, I'm one of the Masons at Turning Point. She said that. And people are still trying to make excuses for her. This is the first time she's ever said that she's one of the Masons that, or anything with masonry that comes out of her mouth. That's the first time she's ever said it. Now, she's shown it when she went to Europe and took a picture in this cathedral and she was on a black and white tile floor. I mean, she told you then, but this is the first time she actually said it with her mouth. And people still don't want to believe it. That's how deep the spell is. But they controlled. Like, but you've seen her with Charlie Kirk putting their hands in the pyramid. They tell you that they controlled. So all this rebellion that they have against Israel or standing up for Israel, you could see it in the symbolism of who they're tied to. So the movie is trying to make it seem like, oh, yeah, this guy is about to sign this contract, and then he don't end up signing the contract, and he walks away. And that's the end of the movie. So it ends dumb. It started dumb and it ended dumb. But if you want to go for a visual representation, you know, of what football life is in a very short time, and you want a good soundtrack to go with it, then yeah, go watch it. But obviously, for you females, I wouldn't watch it because it's so gory and it's a lot of blood and foolishness. I don't like why, you know, if you don't have the Ruach, the strength of Ruach to watch certain things like that, just don't watch it then. If you have sons, women, if you have sons of age, break it down for them, just like I broke it down. Break it down for them. Point out that, ruin it for them. Point out, like, you see that symbol? It is the alchemist symbol. What they're doing is conjuring. And what they want to conjuring is for you to be this particular athlete. So when you get to the altar, when you get to the podium, and they ask you to sign a contract, you are going to want to sign it because they have shown you the glitz and glam. They have shown you the heartfelt speeches. They have pumped up your Ruach so much that you will overlook all the demonic symbolism and all the programming they're trying to put on you for you to be a rich person or be a person that's a god to them. So a lot of people was fooled because it was a Jordan Peele production, but it ain't no Jordan Peele work that went into it. It's just him putting the money behind it. And then some other two guys who directed it or written it, probably hacks, probably people he just brought into his company to try to uplift. But it's not his, you know, his mentality. If it was Jordan Peele, it would have done much more sleeker. You would have seen some scriptures being put in there. You would have seen all like the little hidden symbolisms that we would still be talking about today, like all the rest of his movies. But this one was pretty much right in front of your face. And he tried to hide it, but not hide it. And I know the National Football League probably told him, like, don't make it seem like this is us. Which brings up another point. Like Roger Goodell. You know, Roger Goodell had a father. Obviously, he had as a father. But his father, Charles Goodell Jr., was a senator in New York. And he was a Freemason, if you look him up. It even says that when you look up, was Charles Goodell Jr. a Freemason? It says he was. That's why I believe Freemasonry is the DEI for mediocre white men. Because the only reason why Roger Goodell is in charge of the National Football League is because his father, Charles Goodell, used to gargle the nuts of Israel. Like, I'm talking about, this man would go over there to meet with the first female, which y'all think is the first female prime minister, is actually a man. So the first female prime minister of Israel was a man in drag. You just look up the pictures and you see why. But he's pictured with her, and he used to go into the United States government and shame the United States government for treating Arabs favorably over Israelis. When it came to selling specific weaponry to Israel, he was at the forefront of it. Just look it up. He wanted to sell jets to Israel. Just look up that phrase, and it'll tell you all you need to know about Charles Goodell Jr. So the reason why his son is being put in place is no different. It's through nepotism. It's through fraternal nepotism. So how smart do you think these people actually are? Charlie Kirk, he got done in by a kid over at Cambridge University. And he couldn't do nothing but show a little bit of emotionalism because he was flaming him. But he was trying to, as a Christian, trying to defend the reason why Israel was tearing up Gaza so much. And so Charlie was defending Israel, which is what he has to do because he is a Zionist. He is a Freemason. That's what they're supposed to do. Really, if you look at the reason why they're able to thrive in this country, is and more than the ones they kept being kicked out of, is because they didn't have the foundation where Freemasonry was around. So what they did, and this is how Freemasonry came about. They said, we keep getting kicked out of these countries for tearing up their economy and tearing up their livelihoods through whatever foolishness that they were doing. They call it blood libel. But if you look at the old definitions of that, if you look at the examples, what these occult or Talmudic or Babylonian Jews were doing was snatching Christian children and impricking them so blood would run out. They would ritually abuse these children. They would get caught and they would get sent out of the country. It ain't because people were envious of them or jealous of them or hated them, because they were doing foolishness that was like these old school Babylon mystery religions that were combining into this religion. And it had to do with the cult of Baal, which is sexual immorality and blood sacrificing. They got caught doing it and they kept getting chased out. Regardless of who was doing it and how many people were doing it, the reputation preceded them. So they were getting kicked out of everybody else's country. So what they thought, we need an organization of Gentiles who are dumb enough to do exactly or be an oath to exactly how we live in our Babylonian Talmud. What we want is them to be our messengers, be our defenders for us. We are not a lot of people. So what we need is a lot of dum-dums. We need a lot of mediocre white men and black men to be susceptible to our doctrine, to defend us, and we will give them everything they want. The same deal that Yahusha turned down, these people want to be the middlemen for the deal that Satan tried to give Yahusha. So they said, okay, we'll give them anything they want as long as they defend us. So what they did was had the foundation of Freemasonry laid with George Washington and the rest of those who signed the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution who were Freemasons, and said, okay, everybody has separation of church and state and you can have religious liberty. So the back door to that is, if they give you religious liberty of them being Protestants, well, they weren't really Protestants or Christians, they were Freemasons. So for their religion to come really out of the woodworks was Luciferianism. So them knowing back then, they understood prophecy enough that they wanted Satan and Lucifer to reign because they knew exactly who the real children of Yasharel was. They knew exactly who we were. They didn't get spiritual blindness. They read those scriptures and knew it didn't sound right, that 400 years of it, where they were in Egypt for 400 years of affliction, that was actually 430, and they only did 280 years of affliction. They knew those stories. They had those books. How do you think these books came out of nowhere? You think they all just sat in the Qumran Hills in 1948 into 1972 when all of a sudden they found them? No, they've been had those books. They knew who the real children were. Why do you think they went right to East Africa? They had all the rest of these people to colonize and all these people to put in slavery. But they took their asses right where most of the Israelites were. They knew exactly who you were. So then when they brought America over here, they okay, we're gonna make sure that we keep the real children in perpetual slavery mentally and spiritually and physically as long as we can to destroy them so they accept our oaths, they accept our religions, they will accept our Messiah instead of their Most High, and we can keep them bound here, and we will build the foundation of protecting us. And even making up coalitions and organizations to make it seem like they're a part of us and our struggle is the same as theirs. And we'll even bring up some NAACP and we'll bring up all our Jewish people and we'll put in their civil rights groups and their organizations to make it seem like we've always been there for them. And then that'll be the foundation. So when it's time for Lucifer and Satan to reign, they won't be able to say anything against him. And matter of fact, they will be so spiritually retarded, they won't have the ability to stand against Satan or Lucifer when the time comes. That's how they did it. It don't take much science to know that. They didn't have the foundation of Freemasonry when they were getting kicked out of everybody else's country. If they didn't have Freemasonry here, we would have already been taking them out of this country. TV stations already would have been already, no, we ain't putting this up there. Get out. But the reason why Freemasons start getting into the media, you can see it change. You can see football. And me being a football buff, me sitting there watching Steve Sable films, the NFL films that some of you guys grew up with. I'm talking about you Gen Xers. Those old school films of like the NFL's greatest running backs or the toughest guys, blah, blah, blah. All those. My father, I would sit down from hours on end. That was my Bible. From the time the sun came up, I was watching the same tapes over and over again. Walter Payton, Jim Brown, Bronco Nagurski, Marion Motley, Dick Knight, Train Lane, Ernie Jones, or Ed Too Tall Jones, Jack Lambert, like all those old school guys. That's where my generation was. I mean, I watched Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith and all that, but I was Earl Campbell in it. Like, those guys I loved. Gale Sayers, those guys that I loved. That's what I was watching from the time the sun up to the time it went down. So it's, like I said, I almost lost my train of thought where I was going with it. But you see what I'm talking about. They did all of this because they needed that foundation. And now the reason why it is the way it is, because we don't have nothing to stand on. So now we can't throw them out. We just got to ride this wave out. That's what we're doing. We're riding this wave out. You could tell, like I said, this is what the point I was going. I'm telling you, by the time when you watch old school football, old school National Football League, you could tell by 2005, it started to change. It started to change because they start letting in Freemasons run it. And it was more Freemasons in these organizations. And as soon as Freemasons got in, then you know the Babylonian Talmud came right behind them. So that's why you start seeing football is gay. That's why you start seeing men cheerleaders on the field. Now, mind you, I know these old school owners do not like to see male cheerleaders. I know they can't help but be disgusted to see male cheerleaders on the sideline. But there's nothing they can do about it because they have been also under oath in Freemasonry. That's why some of these owners started dying. That's why some of these coaches started dying. If you really want to go back, shoot. Every year Kansas City has been in the Super Bowl, a person from that organization has died, or a player. The very first time when the Kansas City got into, in this millennial era of going to the Super Bowl, I think it was 2019-2020, Marty Schottenheimer died. The next year after that, Norma Hunt died, which is the wife of Lamar Hunt. After that, Jimmy, a radio personality, he died. The last Super Bowl, Jimmy Wilkerson, he died recently. And I played with him. He was my year. So you see this, the landscape of National Football League has become a human sacrifice ritual. It's become a cult ritual. It's been more National Football League players, former and current, that have died more than the previous years in the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. Since its inception. Let me hit you with this one. Rudy Johnson, he came 2 years after me, played for the Cincinnati Bengals. He wore number 32. Rudy Johnson in septenary, which is all you're doing is counting from 1 to 7, then back down to 1 again till you get to the end of the alphabet. Not that hard. Septenary is just, sept means 7. I talked about this when I talked about the episode of the seasons of the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, and how September, October, November ain't the same seasons as it was mentioned in scripture when it came to the Feast of Hanukkah. But back to this original story. So septenary means 7. That's it. What is 7 in the letter? G. What is G in the emblem or the square and compass? Freemason. Okay, we got that figured out now. So in septenary, his name equals 42. 42 in other numerology cipher, which they call it reduction. It's the N word. If you understand, 59, 42 is always linked to Negroes in this country. It's their way of calling you a Negro, a slave, a cotton picker, nigger, and without saying it to your face. So when you die, they mock you with numerology, is what I'm saying. I'm not selling you. So let me go further. So the woman who just died, Asata Shakur, her real name in Chaldean equals the age that she died, which was 78. She dies 42 weeks before her birthday. Her birthday, if you add up the birthday of 2026, equals 33. But again, I'm going back to the 42. That is their way of saying that we could have gotten this chick in Cuba all these years. But matter of fact, we're going to get her when it best serves our programming. So if they want to get this race war going, of course they would take out a militant Black Panther Party member at the time they're trying to get this race war going. And the reason why they chose the woman, because like I said before, they like using the Black female emotionalism out of this generation to get things popping off. So that's why they really killed her off. It wasn't that she died of old age. So let me go back to the Rudy Johnson situation. They said that he was killed or he suicided himself. My mother knows his mother, and she knows the people that's around in that little circle. So the woman, not his mother, but this woman told my mother that he threw himself off a 16th floor. And they said it was CTE complications. You don't know if it's CTE complications unless they did an autopsy on his brain and they would show that he had damage from CTE. Saying it was CTE complications, there's no way in the world. Certain diseases you can't see, readily identify until they do an autopsy. So the fact that they said it already know that it was BS to me. Suicide in numerology is 23, which is the day that he supposedly committed suicide, September 23. Now, what makes this funny is that Cedric Benson, who also played for the Cincinnati Bengals, who also wore the number 32, died in a motorcycle accident. Motorcycle and 16, which is the floor that he supposedly jumped off of, both equal the same in numerology. Franco Harris played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who also wore 32, died 2022. So from 2019, 2022, 2025, with 3 years in between, are three running backs in the same division. Same division, AFC North. Same division. Die 3 years apart. Now, mind you, I could throw in for you O.J. Simpson. The only reason why I didn't, because I can't really identify if it was actually a sacrifice or the fact he actually died from colon cancer or whatever cancer he had. I don't know. But I could throw him in there with you, throw him in there for you. And he wore number 32. Still AFC. But if you took him out, you still would have 3 years in between. Three players, three running backs with the same number. If you did 3 times 2, that's 6. So you get your 666. But let me hit you with this. If you did 3 plus 2, you would get 5. So you would get 555. If you look at the Washington Monument, it's 555, it's 555 feet tall. What is 555 feet in inches? It is 6,666 inches. So there's another 666. If you go to Pastor Joel Tudman, his church that they created this whole entire fake drama of him being kicked out of the church that he was in. And that guy, Hernandez, was surrounded by Freemasons because they kept doing all the little stupid symbolism on the flower, on the flyers. His church is now called, Believer City. Now, I looked up Believer City. There's also a couple other churches called Believers City. So they chose to use Believer City. Believer City in numerology in Satanic Cipher is 555. Pastor Joel Tudman is a Prince Hall Freemason. He's been showing you and telling you this, but every time he talks, he's putting his hand in a pyramid. He's putting his thumbs in a pyramid. Right in front of your face. He even taking photo shoots doing the same symbolism. This is the alchemy they are working on the minds of the ignorant. This is the alchemy. It ain't turning ordinary metals into gold. They're literally, man, I hate to say this word, and pardon my friends, they're literally turning shit into golden shit. That's all they're doing. If you can't see the symbolism, you are blinded by what you see with your eyes. And you see either a man or an image of a man that you think is righteous, but you're not seeing the real image of the man because you're not seeing the symbolism. The veil has not truly dropped from your eyes because you want to attach yourself to an image. And this is the reason why Yahuwah didn't want any busts like the Greeks and the Romans do of busts of what the disciples look like, what the prophets look like, what Yahushua look like. There is a reason for why he didn't want any image of his son or any image of the Israelites ever in a mass population showing the artistic or the image of what Yahuwah or Yahushua looked like. It's the reason why he did this. It's the reason why he didn't want this to go on, because he wanted you to be attached to him spiritually and not attached to an image. And this is the problem with most people who say they read the Bible and read scriptures. They are attached to an image. The reason why people go into communities like the Hebrew Israelite camps, because they're attached to an image. And Yah is exposing that image to you. The reason why y'all keep falling for the Charlie Kirk situation, the same you fall for Justin Bieber, the same you fell for Kanye West, is because you are attached to an image and you have no faith. You don't have the Ruach of discernment. You don't have the Ruach HaKodesh. That is the point. That is the whole point of this. The point is to be so attached to the Father that a man from out of the sky in CGI or hologram could stand right in front of you and say, I am the Messiah, and you still call BS. You still wouldn't believe it because you were attached to the Father. And the reason for that, because I said in the middle of this whole episode, the thing I want you to take home with you is that the bull S, it has to come before the masterpiece. There has to be a forgery or imitation before you get the blessing, before the masterpiece shows up. That's why it's set the way it's set up. That's the reason why the Most High didn't allow any characterization or any image or any artwork of anything in the scriptures, and he didn't want any images being made or created in scripture, because he knew to get to the end, more people are going to be attached to an image. It says they're going to be marveling at the beast because they're attached to the image. He's telling you, since he's loved you, since he put you in the wilderness to humble you, to prove you, that do not be attached to images, because the image that I'm allowed to show up in the great delusion is going to send everybody into my trap, but I'm going to guard you from this trap because I've gotten you attached to me spiritually. I'll see y'all next Thursday.